Well, hello there, and good evening, ladies and gentlemen. The MSS crew would like to once again thank you for joining us here in the Fred Bertelsen Memorial Old Time Radio Room of RadioOutOfThePast.org. And this is your MSS host, Luis Jr., assisting with bringing to you yet another exciting and exhilarating internet broadcast of Michael's Saturday Night Surprise. Well, folks, as promised, we are back again, hooking you up with a little bit of the stuff that you just keep coming back for more of, and that is some good old-fashioned old-time radio. We have several shows, and all you need to do is keep coming back, and we will keep playing them. Allow me to introduce the presenter for tonight's program, quickly becoming a fan favorite, and he happens to be the second member of our Canadian broadcast team, Mad Maxwell Crawford. Let's just grab those snacks, drinks, get ourselves nice and comfortable, and enjoy the program. Max, the microphone is yours.
Good evening, ladies and gentlemen. This is Maxwell, welcoming you to Michael's Saturday Surprise. Today's interesting theme is murder and the consequences thereof. If you got away with murder, would you be able to live with it or not? Well, here's our first show, The Mysterious Traveler and Murder in Jazz Time, as aired on April 20th, 1948.
Mutual presents The Mysterious Traveler.
This is The Mysterious Traveler, inviting you to join me on another journey into the realm of the strange and the terrifying. I hope you will enjoy the trip, that it will thrill you a little and chill you a little. So settle back, get a good grip on your nerves, and be comfortable, if you can, as you hear the story I call Murder in Jazz Time. Tonight, we're going to delve into the strange and confusing events in the life of Alexander Drake. But what person can tell you of these events better than Alex Drake himself? As our story begins, Drake is seated at a small table, staring at several blank sheets of writing paper. Slowly he picks up a pen, hesitates, then starts to write.
I scarcely know at what point to begin telling of the things that have happened to me these past months. I suppose I should begin with Vicky. Vicky, who I have loved ever since we were children. If my love was never returned by her, I was content to wait, ever hopeful that someday she would reciprocate my feelings. We saw a great deal of each other after she graduated college, and I watched with interest as she embarked upon a singing career. Success came to Vicky quickly and smoothly, as all things did. She sang with several name bands and then became a star attraction at the swankier nightclubs. Several years passed, and then one night, as I had always dreamed of it happening, Vicky agreed to marry me. That was the happiest moment of my life. A week later, we were married and driving to New Orleans on our honeymoon. Happy, darling?
Oh, yes, Alex, yes.
No regrets about giving up your career?
None at all.
Oh, it's good of you to say that, Vicky. I'll try to make it up to you.
Oh, no, really, Alex. Giving up my career isn't any sacrifice. For a long time now, I've known that I wasn't very good.
Not very good? Why, you were getting $1,000 a week at the Casablanca. And look at the way your recordings are selling.
Oh, let's face it, Alex. I have a nice voice. I'm fairly attractive. And thanks to fine publicity, I've come a long way. But I'm not really a very good singer.
Oh, nonsense. I think you're a wonderful singer.
That's because you're in love with me, darling. But I know better. Take, for example, that recording of Easy Living that I made.
That was one of the best things you ever did.
Yes, Alex, it was. But have you ever heard the recording that Billie Holiday made of that number?
No, I don't think I have.
Well, if you had heard it, you'd know the difference between good singing and really great singing.
You mean she was so much better?
Yes, Alex. And if I can't be a top blues singer, then I won't sing at all.
Oh, Vicky, you're young yet. It takes time.
No, Alex. You either have it or you don't.
I see. Is that why you decided to give up your career? Marry me?
Yes, darling.
I'm glad you told me. Oh, look, Vicky, that sign. Only 37 miles to New Orleans.
Oh, wonderful. At last, I'm going to see New Orleans. You don't know how long I've waited for this.
Why all this enthusiasm for New Orleans?
Why, Alex, New Orleans is the birthplace of jazz. Think of all the great musicians and singers who've come from there and the wonderful jazz they created. People like Willie Johnson, Bertha Hill, and Jack Simmons. And just think, Jeff Becker is still in New Orleans, and we can hear him play.
He's the fellow that owns the famous waterfront cafe, isn't he?
Oh, Alex, Jeff Becker isn't famous because he owns a cafe. Why, he's one of the great names of jazz. Many critics think he's the finest jazz pianist who ever lived.
Forgive my ignorance, darling. I'm afraid I'm just a long hair at heart. Tell me, if this fellow Jeff Becker is as great as you say, how come I haven't heard more about him?
Because he's always refused to leave New Orleans. He's had some fabulous offers to play in New York, but he's turned them all down. That's why he isn't widely known. But real lovers of jazz come from all over the country to hear Jeff Becker play at his cafe.
Well, then I guess there isn't any question as to where we're going tonight. Jeff Becker's it is. An hour later, we were in New Orleans and registered at a hotel. Early that evening, Vicky and I had supper at Antoine's, and then we left for Jeff Becker's cafe. As we drove, Vicky was unable to hide the excitement she felt. Jeff Becker's cafe turned out to be a long, rambling, shabby building with a balcony that ran the length of it and hung over the river. The inside of the cafe was as unpretentious as the outside. There were 40 ancient tables or so, a small bandstand, and an equally small dance floor. A mahogany bar ran the length of one wall with a long mirror behind it reflecting the shabbiness of the cafe. As we were seated, a few musicians began to drift in and take their places on the bandstand. Vicky whispered excitedly to me the names of the musicians whom she seemed to know without ever having seen before. And suddenly, Vicky clutched at my arm.
Alex, look. There's Jeff Becker.
Where?
There he is, walking towards the piano.
That little sandy-haired man?
Yes. That's Jeff Becker.
I stared at him and felt somewhat disappointed. For no good reason whatsoever, my imagination had led me to see Jeff Becker as an impressive-looking individual, whereas in reality he was a slight man, being no more than 5'5", with a plain, undistinguished-looking face. He looked a good deal younger than the 50 he was reputed to be. There were two very attractive-looking women with him, both of whom followed his every move as he sat down at his piano. The talk and the laughter in the cafe died out, and Jeff Becker and his men began to play. As Jeff Becker played, the disappointment I'd felt about him fast left me. As he sat there at the piano playing smoothly, effortlessly, he was no longer a small, slight man with a plain face. There was a warmth and greatness about him, and even I, who was no lover of jazz, could sense the genius of Jeff Becker.
Wonderful.
Yes, Vicky, he is. He really is.
Alex, look. He's coming this way.
Yes, he seems to be coming to our table.
Good evening, Miss Saunders. Welcome to New Orleans.
Why, thank you, Mr. Becker. Thank you very much.
Just call me Jeff. Only tourists call me Mr. Becker.
All right, Jeff. Oh, this is my husband, Alex Drake.
Glad to meet you.
How do you do? Won't you join us?
Sorry, no. I only have a minute. The boys and me got some playing to do.
I've heard Brown Bee Boogie played before, but never as wonderfully as you do it.
Thanks very much, Vicky.
How did you know who I was?
I've seen pictures of you.
Have you ever heard my wife sing, Jeff?
Yes, I have. Well, I gotta be getting back to work. It's been nice meeting you folks. See you around.
Yes, of course. Huh. An abrupt sort of fellow, isn't he?
He was being tactful, darling, not abrupt. He was afraid you might ask him what he thought of my singing.
Well, what's wrong with my asking him that?
Oh, nothing. Only it would have made Jeff Becker unhappy to have told you the truth about my singing.
Well, anyway, I still think you're great.
Thank you, darling. Oh, look, they're going to play now.
We sat listening to the magic of Jeff Becker's music for hours. When I suggested to Vicky that we leave, she refused, insisting that we remain until closing time, which was 4 a.m. The next evening found us once again at Jeff's cafe, and again we remained until closing. Try as I might, I couldn't get Vicky interested in the sights of New Orleans and the fascinating swamp country nearby. Night after night, despite my protests, we would end up at Jeff's cafe. Life to Vicky came to revolve around these nightly visits, and all else seemed unreal to her. Soon, even I lost track of time. Weeks passed, and then one night at closing time, Jeff Becker came over to our table for the first time since the night we'd met.
Howdy, folks. Glad to see you still with us.
Hello, Jeff.
Well, how do you folks like New Orleans? Having a good time? Well,
frankly, we've seen very little of New Orleans outside of this cafe.
Well, just between us, there ain't very much more to see.
I agree. Oh, dear, it's closing time already. No sooner do we get here than it's time to go home.
Well, if you'd like to hear more music, why not stay on? The boys and me always have a small session after closing hours.
Well, thanks very much, Jeff, but I'm afraid that we really must be...
Oh, we'd love to stay on, Jeff. It's wonderful of you to ask us.
Glad to have you. See you around.
Vicky, enough is enough. We've been here since 9 o'clock.
Alex, you don't understand. It's an honor to have Jeff ask you to stay on. Few people get that invitation.
Well, I'm duly appreciative, believe me, but 7 hours is enough of this place for one night. Now, come along, Vicky. Let's go back to the hotel.
No, I want to stay for the session.
Vicky, I think I've been more than reasonable, coming here night after night for weeks. Now it's about time I got my way. I insist we leave.
I won't go, I tell you. I'm staying here. If you want to go back to the hotel, don't let me keep you.
As Vicky screamed at me, for a brief flashing moment, I almost imagined I'd seen hate in her eyes. The shock of that moment was like a revelation. Suddenly, I realized that Vicky had changed, that I was losing her. Her face, as she listened to the music, was like the faces of the musicians and Jeff Becker's himself, their emotion laid bare. By turns, ecstatic, impassioned, unresisting, I was an outsider looking in on a way of life of which I could never be part. The lateness of the hour, the smoke-filled room, and my confused thoughts were too much for me, and I fell asleep with my head on the table. I have no idea how long I slept, but when I awoke, it was daylight. I became aware of a woman singing. I looked up. I saw it was Vicky. Vicky standing by the piano, singing to Jeff Becker.
Since it is a dancing floor, just for my...
Well, Jeff?
I don't know, Vicky.
What's wrong?
Hard to say.
Oh.
Vicky, jazz was born in these parts. And it came from the people. The people who worked on the levees, the riverside whalers, and in the fields. It was part of the bone and flesh of old-timers like Willie Johnson and Joe Fletcher. They played jazz the way it was in their hearts. A singer like Chippy Hill just stepped up, clapped her hands, and gave out with the blues. That's what made it great. They played and sang as they felt.
I see.
Second-rate musicians picked up something that was fine and clean and took it to the big cities in the north. But they weren't playing for the sake of music. They were playing for greenbacks.
And is that what's wrong with my singing?
Afraid so. I reckon you had too many teachers, Vicky, and they all taught you to sing by the book. It may be popular, but it ain't good.
Do you think it's too late to go back?
Hard to say, Vicky. Do you want to start all over?
Oh, yes, Jeff, yes. Would you let me stay on here and sing with your band?
Well, if you feel...
No, Vicky.
Alex!
You're not singing with the band. We're leaving New Orleans at once.
Alex, be reasonable. You know...
It's no use, Vicky. We're leaving New Orleans today, and that's final. I'll get your suitcases from the closet, Vicky, so that you can start packing.
I tell you, Alex, I'm not leaving New Orleans. Not only am I staying, but I'm going to sing with Jeff Becker's band.
Vicky, are you blind? Can't you see what's happening? You're losing all sense of perception, of values. Life to you has come to mean only Jeff Becker's cafe.
I don't care. That's where I belong, where I really feel alive. If you loved jazz, felt about it the way I do, you'd understand.
I do understand, but there are other things besides Jeff Becker and his music.
Not for me, there aren't.
Now, here's a suitcase. Start packing.
It's no use, Alex. I'm not leaving.
You'll have to choose between Jeff Becker and myself, Vicky.
Well, I'm sorry it's come to this, Alex. But I'm still going to sing with Jeff Becker's band.
It was at that moment I knew that I had lost Vicky. As she turned away from me, an overwhelming hatred for Jeff Becker surged up within me. Had he been in the room at that moment, I would have killed him without any hesitation. I left the hotel, walked the streets of New Orleans. I knew that Vicky would never be mine as long as Jeff Becker were alive. And I also knew that I couldn't go on without Vicky. There was only one answer. I returned to the hotel, told Vicky I would remain in New Orleans with her. Night after night, we continued going to that waterfront cafe. And each night after the place had closed, Vicky would sing with the band.
There'll be no one unless that someone is you.
As I listened to Vicky sing, even I, who knew very little of music, could sense that her singing was superb. The musicians in the band looked at her approvingly and accepted her as one of themselves. Under Jeff Becker's almost hypnotic guidance, she sang with warmth and feeling. And as much as I hated Jeff Becker, I couldn't help but admire his genius for bringing out talent. The music ended, and Jeff rose from the piano and patted Vicky on the shoulder encouragingly. He left the bandstand and started walking through the cafe towards his office in the back. This was the moment I had long waited for. I quickly eased out of my chair, which was in a darkened part of the cafe, and slipped out into the balcony. I then ran quietly along the balcony until I reached the French door that opened into Jeff Becker's office. I got there just as Jeff sat down at his desk. He was alone. I opened the door and stepped into his office.
Oh. Hello, Alex. What can I do for you?
I've come for my wife.
Your wife? Vicky isn't in here.
Vicky is wherever you are. And I can't have that, Jeff. She's got to be mine.
She is yours. You know that.
No, no. She belongs to you now. She said as much. As long as you're alive, Vicky will never be mine. I know that.
You're wrong, Alex. Believe me. It's music.
She's got to be mine. She's got to be.
Alex, don't. No.
I felt Jeff's body go limp in my hands. And I knew he was dead. I quickly picked up his slight body in my arms and carried it out to the balcony. There was no one in sight.
I leaned over the balcony rail and dropped Jeff's body. It fell into the river with a small splash and was gone. I quietly walked to the other end of the balcony and slipped into my seat in the darkened cafe. The musicians and Vicky were still on the bandstand talking, and I knew they hadn't missed me during the few minutes I'd been gone. The ordeal was over. A week passed, and Jeff Becker's disappearance was the talk of New Orleans. The police questioned everyone, but were unable to solve the mystery. Vicky was inconsolable and locked herself in her room at the hotel, refusing to see anyone.
Who is it?
It's Alex, darling. Please let me in. Darling, you can't stay in your room like this day after day. You know it isn't good for you. Vicky, let's leave New Orleans. Go to New York.
No, I'm going to wait until Jeff comes back.
Vicky. Jeff isn't coming back.
What? What do you mean?
A body was found floating in the Gulf this morning. The police think it's Jeff's body.
Oh, no!
After a week in the water, naturally, it was hard to identify.
Jeff! Dead?
Yes, darling. It's in all the papers.
Oh, Alex!
You mustn't cry, darling. Here, let me wipe your tears. Don't you think it would be better if we left New Orleans?
All right, Alex. Anything you say.
A few days later, we were back in New York. There was snow on the ground, and the air was invigorating. What had happened in New Orleans seemed like a dream, a bad dream. At first, Vicky was melancholy, but as days passed, she grew better, and I felt confident that in time she'd be her old self. We saw all the shows in town and dined at the finest restaurants. And then one night, I took her to Carnegie Hall to hear the Philharmonic Orchestra. Here, darling, here's the program.
Thank you.
Oh, I see they're going to play the Rachmaninoff First Piano Concerto with Andre Duval as soloist. You've always liked that concerto, haven't you?
Yes, Alex.
Look, Duval's just come up on stage. Young, isn't he?
Yes, he is.
Happy?
Alex, they're going to play now.
As I sat there in that great concert hall listening to the orchestra, I became aware of discordant playing. I looked at Vicky, at other concertgoers, but none seemed aware of it. The discordancy grew, and then suddenly I realized it wasn't the music of Rachmaninoff I was hearing. It was the music of Jeff Becker, being played faster and faster, louder and louder. I fought the impulse to scream out. As I put my hands to my ears, I became aware of my arm being shaken. It was Vicky.
Alex, what's the matter with you?
Vicky, the music. Listen to
Alex,
it.
Alex, be quiet. Everyone is looking at us.
I can't stand it anymore. Let's get out of here.
All right, Alex, but please be quiet. Everybody's looking at us.
Hurry, Vicky, hurry. Oh, it's gone. Thank goodness I can't hear it anymore.
What's gone?
The music.
Alex, you aren't making any sense. We came to the concert to hear music. What's wrong with you?
Wrong? Nothing. Nothing at all. I just suddenly felt ill in there and had to get out.
Perhaps we'd better see a doctor. You look so pale.
No, I'm all right now.
Are you sure?
Yes. Let's go home now, Vicky, huh? All the way home, I kept thinking of the amazing hallucination I'd had. Obviously, it was the result of the mental strain I had undergone in New Orleans. But with sufficient rest and relaxation, I would soon forget the horrible events that had occurred there. Arriving home, I went to bed, but found it difficult to fall asleep. Hours later, I drifted off into an uneasy sleep, and then I started dreaming.
I dreamt that I was in Jeff Becker's cafe, and the only people there were Jeff and myself. He was seated at the piano playing, smiling at me. I walked over to the bandstand, and he spoke to me.
Hello, Alex. How do you like this number? Pretty good for a dead man, huh?
You can't play if you're dead.
Yes, I can, Alex. You hear my music, don't you?
Yes, I do.
You're always going to hear it, Alex. Always. Because my music will never die. Even if you did kill me, it'll go on and on.
No! Stop! No! I don't want to hear it! Stop! Stop!
Alex, wake up! Alex.
What?
Alex, what is it?
What is it?
You were having a nightmare. You screamed and woke me up.
Yes. I remember now.
What were you dreaming about?
New Orleans.
New Orleans?
Yes. Go back to sleep now, Vicky. I'm all right. I'm all right, I said to her. But I wasn't. That was the beginning of a series of nightmares and hallucinations in which I heard Jeff Becker playing that accursed music of his. When an attack came, I would flee from room to room, pressing my fingers against my ears, but there was no escape. I could hear the rhythmic pounding of Jeff Becker's music in my head, growing louder and louder, relentlessly hammering away. I knew that it would only be a question of time before he drove me mad. I fought for my sanity, but the...
Good morning, Mr. Drake. How are you feeling today? Oh, I see you've done quite a bit of writing. Good. I'm glad you followed my suggestion.
It's all written down, Doctor. Everything that happened to me.
It's fine, Mr. Drake. I'm sure it'll be of great help to both of us. Do you feel in the mood for a visitor?
A visitor?
Yes, your wife.
Yes, I'd like to see Vicky.
She's just outside. I'll have her come in. Will you come in now, Mr. Drake?
Hello, Alex. How are you, darling?
Vicky! Oh, it's good to see you again and have you near me.
Oh, Alex. Dr. Mitchell says that you're much better.
Yes, yes, I'm much better.
Doctor, will you tell him?
Yes, Mr. Drake.
Tell me what?
Oh, won't you sit down, Mr. Drake? Yeah, that's it. Now, what I'm going to tell you will come as a shock, but I'm hopeful it'll rid you of the hallucinations you suffer from.
Yes, Doctor?
Mr. Drake... You did not murder Jeff Becker.
But I did, I did. I choked him until he was dead. And then I threw him into the river.
No, Mr. Drake. Jeff Becker was not dead when you threw him into the river. He was only unconscious, and the water revived him.
His body made a splash. A small splash.
Jeff Becker is alive. He was picked up by a fishing trawler going to sea. Do you understand, Mr. Drake? Jeff Becker is alive. Will you come in, please?
I didn't want to do it, but he made me.
Hello, Alex. How are you?
No! You're dead! You're dead, do you hear? But your music, it goes on and on. I can't get away from your music. It follows me everywhere.
Doctor, can't you do something?
I'm afraid we've failed again. This feeling of guilt is overwhelming. However, we shan't give up.
It's getting louder and louder, and I can't escape from it. Stop it! Stop it!
This is the mysterious traveler again. Too bad about poor Alex, wasn't it? It just goes to prove you may be able to escape the law, but there's always your conscience to reckon with. What happened to Alex? Oh, he finally responded to medical treatment, and today he and Vicky are a very happy couple. However, there are still two things Alex can't stand: jazz and the sight of rivers. He's strictly a long hair these days. Now, I recall another young man once who decided that two murders are better than one, and so... Oh, you have to get off here. I'm sorry. But I'm sure we'll meet again.
I take this same train every week at the same time.
You have just heard The Mysterious Traveler, a series of dramas of the strange and terrifying. All characters in tonight's story were fictitious, and any resemblance to the names of actual persons was purely coincidental. In tonight's cast were Maurice Toplin, Frank Behrens, Joan Alexander, and John Gibson. All recordings heard in this program were played by Miss Hazel Scott and may be found in her latest album, Great Scott. Organ music was played by Paul Taubman. Sound by George Cooney, broadcast engineer Al King. The Mysterious Traveler is written, produced, and directed by Robert J. Arthur and David Cogan. Listen next week to a tale titled
The Little Man Who Wasn't There.
Another strange and suspenseful tale of the Mysterious Traveler. This program has come to you from our New York studios. Another program of tense and dramatic action will follow in just a minute. Stay tuned to the station for Official Detective. Carl Caruso speaking. This is the Mutual Broadcasting System.
Well, folks, that was The Mysterious Traveler and Murder in Jazz Time, as aired on April the 20th, 1948. Now we're going to hear our final show. It's Mysterious Traveler, Killer at Large, as aired on June the 6th, 1950.
The Mutual Broadcasting System presents The Mysterious Traveler, written, produced, and directed by Robert A. Arthur and David Cogan. And starring tonight two of radio's foremost actors, Ralph Bell and Charlotte Holland, in Killer at Large.
This is the Mysterious Traveler, inviting you to join me on another journey into the realm of the strange and the terrifying. I hope you will enjoy the trip, that it will thrill you a little and chill you a little. So settle back, get a good grip on your nerves, and be comfortable, if you can, as we drop in on a very clever gentleman. A gentleman who perfected an ingenious plan to be rid of people he disliked without ever having to suffer for it. I call his story Killer at Large. My friend, Mr. Jeffrey Andrews, is temporarily confined to a hospital, so we're going there to meet him. He's just been given a routine checkup by a new staff physician, Dr. French.
Well, Dr. French, how am I?
You seem to be in fine physical shape, Mr. Andrews.
Guess you'll have to be letting me go soon, eh?
Well, I certainly hope so.
Well, I've had a good rest, but I look forward to getting back in the harness again. I'm Andrews First, you know.
Andrews First?
That's the name of my business. You see, my name is Andrews.
Yes?
So I named my firm Andrews First. And all my advertising carried the line. When you think of building materials, think of Andrews First.
Oh, yes. Very clever.
Used to drive my competitors crazy with my advertising. Yes, I pulled off many a smart deal. And I always let the world in on it. After all, what's the use of doing something smart if no one knows about it?
Well, the urge to boast is certainly human.
For instance, you probably don't know why I'm here. Haven't had a chance to study my case yet, I suppose.
No, not in detail.
Oh, then sit down. I'll tell you. It's really one of the cleverest deals I've ever swung. Now tell me, have you ever wanted to get rid of someone?
Get rid of someone? You mean, kill them?
Exactly. Kill them.
No, I don't believe I have. Why?
Because most people have at one time or another. But they don't do it. They're afraid. Afraid of the law and of being punished.
That's what the law is for. To restrain people's violent impulses.
Exactly. Unless you happen to be smarter than the law, as I was. Because, you see, I figured out how to get rid of not just one person, but of two. Two people I disposed of and can't ever be punished for it.
That's an unusual achievement.
You disprove? But I'm going to tell you how I did it. As I said, what's the use of being clever if people don't know about it? And since the law can't touch me, why not? To make it clear, Doctor, I'll go back to the very beginning. To that evening when I arrived home from work to find my wife Judith and my best friend and personal physician at that time, Alex Hearn, deep in conversation. They jumped apart guiltily as I entered the room and closed the door.
Oh, Jeff, it's you.
Yes, I left the office early. Hello, Alex. How are you?
Fine, Jeff. And you?
Oh, a little tired. I've been working late quite a bit recently.
Yes, yeah, so Judith is saying. So what's this about you buying a share in a new invention that's going to make you richer than Rockefeller?
I've picked up a half interest in a new system of television, Alex. Three-dimensional television in color.
Mm. Sounds big.
Big. It's colossal, man. It's still in the blueprint stage, but we'll iron the bugs out soon. But what were you two plotting so busily when I came in?
Plotting? Well, dear, we were just talking. Nothing serious.
I was giving Judith a little professional advice, that's all.
Oh, don't you feel well, darling?
It's nothing, Jeff. Nothing at all.
Whatever it is, I want to know about it.
Well, it's just that I've been having headaches lately. That's all.
But why didn't you tell me, Judith?
I didn't want to worry you over nothing, Jeff.
It's really nothing serious. I've given Judith a prescription that will help her. Well, I think I better run along now. Got another call to make. You take care of yourselves now, both of you.
As Alex left, I knew from his manner he and Judith had not told me the truth. They were keeping some secret from me. Could Judith be seriously ill and they didn't want me to know? Or was it possible Judith and Alex were... No, that couldn't be. A thing like that might happen to other couples, but not to Judith and me. And yet, they were concealing something, and I had to know what. So I took steps to find out.
Mr. Andrews, I'm from the Apex Detective Agency. I have here the report on your wife you asked for.
Yes, please sit down.
Thank you.
What have you learned?
Your wife left the house at 11:30 this morning. She caught the noon train into town. From the station, she went directly to the Union Department Store.
Whom did she meet there?
Oh, she didn't meet anyone, Mr. Andrews. She just looked around, then had lunch in the restaurant. But afterwards...
Yes, go on.
Well, she made a telephone call. A few minutes later, she's picked up at the entrance by a man in a dark green car.
You got the license number, I hope.
Yes, sir. The car belongs to Alexander Hearn, who lives...
Never mind. I know his address.
We handle hundreds of such cases, Mr. Andrews. I suppose you'll want me to keep following it till I get all the necessary evidence.
No. I know what you're thinking. It's not so.
Yeah, and naturally I sympathize, Mr. Andrews. Of course, it's a shock to learn your wife is deceiving you and...
Why, you... Stop! You're choking me.
It isn't so. Do you hear? My wife loves me. There's nothing between them. Nothing!
I didn't mean anything. I just thought you'd want me to...
Get out of here.
There's nothing between them. How easily I'd said that. And yet, why should Judith meet Alex secretly in town? Where had they gone after they had eluded the detective? I wanted to trust her, but what was their secret? I had to find out. That night, when I returned home, I casually questioned Judith.
What did you do with yourself today, darling?
Oh, I got so bored, I went into town for some inexpensive window shopping.
Oh? Why didn't you phone me? I'd have taken you to lunch.
Well, I knew how busy you were, dear, so I ate by myself.
What did you do after lunch? Taking a show?
No, just window shopped. Then came home on the 4 o'clock train.
Huh. Sounds like a lonely day. You should have taken someone with you.
Well, I didn't decide to go until the last moment. Anyway, I like to window shop alone. Jeff, you look so strange. Aren't you feeling well?
I'm all right. Just a little tired.
Oh, poor darling. You're working much too hard these days. You must stop it, Jeff. Really, you must.
I settled down, pretending to read, but my mind was spinning tormentedly. I didn't decide to go until the last moment.
Anyway, I liked to window shop alone. How easily her answers had come, as though she'd rehearsed them. But they were lies, all of them. Could the detective have been right and I wrong? No, I couldn't believe that. I had no proof. I had to have faith in Judith. I made myself believe I was doing her an injustice, but the very next evening, I found Alex at the house again. He and Judith were walking in the garden, speaking together in low tones, so secretly, they didn't even notice me.
Now, Judith, you must listen to me.
No, Alex, I won't.
But I tell you, we can't go on like this.
But if we're careful, Jeff may never find out.
But he's bound to. People will begin to notice and talk. Sooner or later, Jeff will know that something's wrong. And the longer we wait, the worse it'll be in the end.
I know. Oh, Alex, I can't bear to hurt him.
Oh, Judith, I understand how you feel, but it can't be helped. Now, I have a plan worked out that can't fail.
A plan, Alex?
Two psychiatrists who are friends of mine will sign the papers, and Jeff will be quietly committed to a private sanitarium. We'll make him think it's just for a short rest. He'll never suspect a thing.
Oh, Alex, I couldn't.
But we can't go on hiding the truth from him like this. Believe me, Judith, it's the only way out.
All right, I'll do whatever you say. But we mustn't let Jeff suspect what's happening.
And I'd had faith in her. I thought I was misjudging her when all along she and Alex had been scheming to railroad me into a sanitarium. Oh, it was a clever plan. Alex could manage it through his professional connections, and Judith would become administrator of my fortune. I almost let them know I'd overheard them. And then I got control of myself. There was a better way to handle the situation. I had to think about it and decide what to do. So I slipped quietly away. And a little later, I took Judith out for a drive as though I suspected nothing. But as I drove, I pondered how best to punish them.
What are you thinking about, Jeff? You've hardly said a word all evening. Jeff, I'm speaking to you.
Oh, I'm sorry, dear. I'm afraid my mind was on business.
You really are working too hard these days.
Oh, I'm not working that hard. Too bad we couldn't persuade Alex to come with us tonight. He's always such fun when he forgets he's a doctor.
That's because he puts his work completely out of his mind when he gets a chance to relax.
I suppose it would be better if I were like Alex.
Of course not, dear. I like you just as you are, Jeff, silent moods and all. I wouldn't want you changed.
She lied. I knew she was lying. By now, I found it impossible to believe a word she said. I had too much evidence of the contrary.
Of course, Mr. Andrews, it's a shock to learn your wife is two-time in years.
But if we're careful, Jeff may never find out.
I have a plan worked out that can't fail. Two psychiatrists who are friends of mine will sign the papers, and Jeff will be quietly committed to a private sanitarium.
I like you just as you are, Jeff. Silent moods and all. I wouldn't want you changed.
How easily she said that. How smoothly she continued her deception. Bitter rage burned inside me, and deliberately I stepped hard on the throttle. We went faster and faster until Judith became frightened.
Jeff, why are you going so fast? We're doing more than 60, and there are a lot of curves in the road.
Don't worry, Judith. I'm a good driver.
Yes, but darling, we're almost up to 70. Now, Jeff, please slow down. We'll be killed.
Too bad Alex isn't with us. He'd enjoy this.
Now, Jeff, please, darling, slow down. There's a crossroads ahead, then a curve. Jeff, you'll kill us both.
I kept my foot hard on the throttle. I knew there was a curve ahead, and behind it, a 300-foot drop into a canyon. I made up my mind. I'd drive over the cliff and end everything for both of us. If only I'd had Alex in the car, everything would be perfect. He deserved to die, too. At the thought, my mind cleared abruptly. How stupid it would be to kill myself and leave Alex unpunished when I knew perfectly just how to make him pay. I slowed the car as I planned all my moves. They were going to try to commit me to a home, were they? All right. I'd fall in with their plot. I'd actually help them by pretending to be unbalanced. I'd make it easy for them. And in a few days, a week perhaps, we'd see who was the cleverer. We'd see. Alex, I tell you, there's millions in this new system of television. Maybe billions.
Darling, you're speaking so loudly, everyone in the restaurant is watching.
Well, let them. What does it matter? Nothing can stop me now, man. In 5 years, I'll be one of the wealthiest men in the world. With my genius for organization...
Jeff, Judith tells me that last week you didn't go to your office at all. You just sat around the house and wouldn't say a word to anyone.
Oh, well, you know how it is, Alex. Sometimes a man feels a little blue. All geniuses are like that. Now, when I set up my new television network, I'll revolutionize world communication. I'll have a monopoly no one will be able to buck. And furthermore... I went on talking, seeing Alex's eyes narrow as he watched me. He saw in me all the symptoms of the manic depressive, the exaggerated ideas of importance, the extravagant dreams of wealth. Soon others would notice, my business associates, my friends, the servants. And when that time came, I could count on a visit from Alex, bringing his psychiatrist friends to look me over. Yes, that visit would be coming very soon now. Very soon.
Jeff, darling, Alex has come to see you. He has two friends with him.
Hello, Jeff, old man. How are you?
Oh, just fine, Alex. For the last month, I've been working on the plans for my television network. It's going to be the biggest thing of the century.
Jeff, I want to talk to you. And I want you to meet some men I brought with me.
Oh, Alex, I've no time to talk with strangers.
They're two doctors, close friends of mine.
Oh, what do they want? With my plans taking up all my time,
they're here because of your new project, Jeff. You see, Judith has been afraid you're working too hard these days.
I'm probably just being silly, darling. But I would like you to have a thorough examination before really starting on your new enterprise. You don't mind, do you?
Oh, I haven't time to bother with such things. You know, I have too much to do.
See, Jeff.
Oh, well. All right, but it mustn't take too long now.
They're waiting in the hall. I'll bring them right in.
At last, my patience was being rewarded. Alex and Judith's scheme was working perfectly, and so was mine. Alex brought in his friends and introduced them as Drs. Carlton and Marshall. Without waiting for them to question me, I plunged into an excited description of my plans. As I went on and on, I saw them look at each other and nod slightly. Then, as though they were satisfied, Dr. Marshall brought the conversation to a close.
That'll be enough for the time being, Mr. Andrews. I should like to continue this discussion another time.
But, Doctor, I haven't finished telling you of my plans yet.
You need some rest, Jeff.
Yes, dear, you look so tired. Let me take you to your room.
Well, all right, Judith, but I can't rest long. I have too much work to do.
Alex, watch him carefully. There should soon be a definite change. The elated mood should give way to despondency. After that...
I couldn't help overhearing Dr. Marshall's words as Judith led me out of the room. Alex, watch him carefully. There should soon be a definite change. And he was correct. I knew the right symptoms just as well as he did. So the next day I became depressed. Refused to speak, claimed that I was being persecuted, and even pretended to cry in self-pity. And the following morning, Alex and his two friends were back again.
Good morning, Mr. Andrews.
You remember Dr. Marshall, Jeff, and Dr. Carlton?
Jeff, say hello to your guest.
No, leave me alone. I don't want to talk to anyone.
The other day, you were highly enthused about your new business venture. Don't you want to tell me more about it?
No. No one cares about my plans. I'm alone, all alone. Everyone's against me.
Jeff.
Do you feel this way often? I mean that everyone's against you and life isn't worth living?
Yes. How did you know?
Well, that's because I'm your friend. You can tell me all about it.
You don't know what it's like. To be all alone, to have no friends, to know that everyone hates you, wants to hurt you.
Yes, I understand. Well, I'll see that no one hurts you. Wouldn't you like to go someplace where you'd be safe? Where you'd be surrounded by people who were your friends, wanted to help you?
Yes, I'd like that, but there isn't any such place.
I think I know one. But we've talked long enough for now.
Shall I have Judith take him in the garden?
Yes. I think it will do him good.
Judith, perhaps a little fresh air would make Jeff feel better. Why don't you take him for a walk in the garden?
Yes, of course. Come, give me your hand, darling, and we'll go out in the sunshine for a while. That's it.
I'll call you when we're ready.
Yes, all right, Alec.
I let Judith lead me into the gardens. Through the library windows, I could see Alex and the two psychiatrists. Alex wasted no time getting them to sign the papers that would commit me to a home from which he and Judith would see I never emerged. But he didn't know that the signing of those papers meant my scheme had succeeded, not his. After a few minutes, Alex came to the door and called.
Judith, will you bring Jeff in now?
Yes, all right. Come along, dear.
All right, I'll come.
Oh, Jeff, we've been talking things over, and Dr. Marshall knows a place where you'd be very happy.
Yes, Mr. Andrews. Small rest home upstate. You'll be able to get a good rest there among friends.
Anything, I don't care.
No reason you shouldn't go up today. Alex can drive you up this afternoon.
I don't care when we go. Nothing makes any difference to me.
And, darling, in a little while, you'll be home again. Feeling so much better.
Come, Jeff. Judith and I will help you pack.
Yes, give me your hand now, Jeff. And we'll go with Alex to your room and pack your things.
And we'll go with Alex to your room to pack your things. My best friend and my loving wife. And they couldn't wait to get rid of me. But I was smiling to myself in triumph as Judith opened the door to my room.
Come in, dear. Now, you just sit down and we'll take care of everything.
Now, you must have courage, Judith. It's almost over. I think two bags will be enough for now. If Jeff needs anything later, you can take it to him.
Yes, Alex. Jeff, dear, what suits would you like? Jeff, what are you looking in that golf bag for?
Just something I've been keeping here. I've got it now.
Jeff, a revolver?
Yes. And fully loaded.
Well, what do you want the gun for, Jeff? Here, give it to me. I'll take care of it for you.
Stay where you are. That's better. I want to talk to you. I've been waiting quite a while for this moment.
What are you saying?
Oh, come, Judith. You don't have to pretend anymore.
Jeff, let me have that gun.
I want you to stand still or I'll shoot.
Alex, he means it.
Yes, I do mean it. Your little plot's been an extremely clever one.
Our little plot? What do you mean?
The idea of having me committed so you two could be rid of me. But you must admit I did help it along by my cooperation.
Jeff, what are you talking about?
It's no use pretending anymore, my dear. I've known everything for weeks. Ever since I overheard the two of you talking in the garden one evening.
You heard us talking in the garden? Then that was why you almost killed yourself and me that night when you were driving so fast.
Yes. I changed my mind because that would have left dear Alex still alive.
Jeff, you don't understand. That conversation you overheard
was... My best friend and my loving wife. Well, you'll be together without me, all right. But we'll be in different worlds.
You're mad, really mad.
Of course I am, my dear, of course. Haven't two reputable doctors signed papers testifying to the fact? Which, in the eyes of the law, relieves me of responsibility for my actions.
You aren't going to...
But I am.
Oh, no, Jeff.
Yes, my dear, yes. I'm going to give you both what you deserve. Death.
Oh, no, Jeff, no. You're wrong, darling. You must
There's
listen
There's nothing to,
to
listen. But I shall be as considerate as possible, my dear. I shall punish Alex first.
No, Jeff. We have been keeping a secret from you, but it's not the secret you think. You're wrong about the whole affair.
I don't think so, Alex.
Jeff, put that gun down. Jeff! Jeff!
But... Jeff, you should have listened.
You've killed him.
Yes, Judy. And now it's your turn. I shall be lonely without you. I loved you so much.
Jeff, Darling, you mustn't kill me because you're wrong. I still love you. I do.
I wish I could believe that, but I can't.
Jeff, you've misinterpreted what you heard. Really, you have.
I think not,
Judy. Now, Jeff, please, please give me time enough to explain everything.
Forever
to
would
you.
Not be time enough, my dear, and I would rather not think of you dying with lies upon your lips.
But they're not lies. No, Jeff, no. Put down that gun. Dr. Marshall, help, help!
No one can help you. You see, the door is locked. It'll all be over long before anyone can get here. Now look into my eyes, Judy.
Dr. Marshall! Dr. Carlton!
What is it,
Mrs.
Andrews?
Break the door down, quickly!
No one's talking.
They can't get into this room in time, my dear. Now look into my eyes. It's because I loved you so much that I had to do this. Now, goodbye, Judith.
So, Doctor, that's how I did it. I pulled the trigger just as Dr. Marshall and Dr. Carlton broke the door down. Too late to save Judith. And you see the beauty of my plan, of course. It was perfectly safe. I was certified as being of unsound mind, so I couldn't be punished. Oh, naturally, for the last 2 years, I've been confined here in this institution, but I haven't minded it, really. I've been gradually responding to treatment. I've been careful not to respond too fast, you see. And soon you'll be letting me go as cured. I'll be free as air. Now I ask you, Doctor, wasn't that rather clever?
It might be considered so, Mr. Andrews. But why have you told me all this? Aren't you afraid I'll report it?
The police will never believe it. Besides, they could do nothing if they did. No, Doctor, I'm in the clear. I'll start a new life and take up my plans where I left off. That television invention is still waiting to be developed.
Hello, may we come in?
Dr. Marshall said it'd be all right for us to speak to Jeff today. Well, hello, old man. How are you?
Judy. Alex. Oh, no.
Darling, I'm so glad to be able to see you again at last.
No.
No.
You're not real. You're dead.
Mr. Andrews.
Send them away. They have no right to come back. I killed them. They're dead.
Mr. Andrews, calm yourself, please. I'll take care of them. I'll send them back where they belong. Please, both of you, come outside.
They have to go back. They have to stay in their graves. The dead must stay buried.
Yes, of course, Jeff. We won't bother you again. Come, Judith.
They can't be allowed to disturb me with the dead. I won't stand for it. I tell you, I won't stand for it. I won't stand for it.
Alex, no. He still isn't well.
No.
We'd never have come, Dr. French, but we thought he was almost well.
Yes, so did we. But we were wrong. Just temporary improvement. He still believes that you were plotting against him and that he killed you for it.
But you understand the truth, don't you?
I think I do, yes.
Well, he overheard us talking about his mental condition and trying to decide what to do about it. And he completely misinterpreted what he heard. And then he tried to shoot us and had to be brought here. And...
of course, Mrs. Andrews. But I'm afraid we'll never be able to make him believe the truth.
Oh, Doctor, no.
You see, in his mind, he's killed you. As far as he's concerned, you're dead. I'm afraid you must never see him again. He'll live out his life here, believing he has committed a murder for which he cannot be punished.
Jeff's idea looked like a good one for a while, didn't it? But I don't advise you to try it. You might wind up the way Jeff did. In fact, my advice is to forget the whole thing. You'll be much happier. There's no such thing as the perfect crime.
Which brings me to my story for next week. Death has two faces. It's about a gentleman who discovers a new way to die, in which he lets someone else do all the work. And he...
Oh, you have to get off here. I'm sorry.
I'm sure we'll meet again. I take this same train every week at the same time.
Just heard The Mysterious Traveler, with a title role played by Maurice Tarplin. Others in our cast were Ralph Bell, Charlotte Holland, Matt Polan, and Chester Stratton. All characters in our story were fictitious, and any resemblance to the actual persons living or dead is purely coincidental. Original music composed and played by Al Finelli. Phil Tonkin speaking. This is the world's largest network, the Mutual Broadcasting System.
Well, folks, that was The Mysterious Traveler and Killer at Large, as aired on June the 6th, 1950. I hope you enjoyed both radio shows. They were very fascinating to me. And it was funny how both instances, the murderers didn't succeed. And they ended up almost killing themselves in their own prison. Have a good October. Peace out and have fun. Thank you for listening. And now, let's pass the microphone back to Louise and close the show.
Okay, Mad Max. Let's rein them in there. Okay, ladies and gentlemen. Unfortunately, it has reached that time. We are just about through with our broadcast hour here. So it is time for me to wrap things up and shut things down for this week's broadcast of Michael's Saturday Night Surprise. You know what to do. If you want more, you know what time and where to be. As usual, if you have any questions, comments, complaints, or maybe even a request or two, why don't you please address them to MikeAmeli at earthlink.net. That's MikeAmeli @earthlink.net. We will soon be releasing the key and turning over the room to you, the listening audience. Please do with it as you wish, for as long as you wish. But just remember, be nice to one another. Otherwise, I might have to come out and get you. On behalf of myself and the rest of the MSS crew, have a great night, a great weekend, and goodbye.